WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Again, filling in for Steve this morning, Domati Pongo on the Associated Bank Market Desk right now. As you heard from Vic just moments ago, Dow futures trading up 16 points right now. S&P futures up 2.5. NASDAQ futures up 9.5. Oil relatively flat, down about a third of a point. Now, Apple shares dropped yesterday amid reports of weak iPhone 10 demand. That's due to sales forecasts being decreased from 50 million units to 30 million units. Now, the company has not confirmed this. That report came out of Taiwan's Economic Daily. Now, what seemed to be missing to me and a lot of analysis about that, those sales forecasts decreasing and shares dropping was the other elephant in the room. Apple going through 8 lawsuits after admitting to slowing down their phones without warning to compensate for the poor battery performance. Now, if you're like me, you see your phone get slow. If you're lazy, you say, well, I just need to get the new iPhone. This phone is crap. I remember waking up one day in September and I was tweeting out that my phone, my battery sucks. I don't know what's going on. Something's wrong with my phone. Apple support DM'd me, and I'm going back and forth with Apple support. They're testing my phone. They're saying the battery looks like everything is fine. So yesterday, I set up a Genius Bar appointment. I'm getting somewhere with this, guys. I set up a Genius Bar appointment yesterday. I walk into this beautiful Apple store. Actually, it was my first time going there since they opened. Walk in, you know, I'm telling the lady, listen, my phone isn't working. She does a firmware reset on my phone. Now, at the time, my battery was about 50%. When I got home, it was 14%. I crashed, fell asleep, woke up this morning, 10% battery. Still good. All they did was a firmware reset. Now, this is how they broke it down to me. Now, again, I'm not a tech guy, just repeating verbatim what they said. He said the firmware is like the foundation of a home. If you're building a home, you can fix a leaky roof, but it won't do you any good if the foundation is bad. So they said once they fix that firmware problem, your battery will become more efficient. And all I could think about was these lawsuits. Don't know if they purposely slowed down my phone in particular. Could have. I have the iPhone 7, not the 7 Plus. Not the 8, not the 10, so I may very well be one of those that folks are talking about. But I couldn't help but think about this Samsung commercial when I was going through this. Let me paint the scene for you. I don't know if you guys have seen this. David, have you seen the Samsung commercial? Let's go to it. Now, there isn't any audio aside from this beautiful jazz music. Bring it down for me just a tad. So if you're watching this commercial, you will see a kid get an iPhone in 2007, and his girlfriend has a Samsung. And since back in the day, she's been able to do cool things like write on her screen with a pen, he had to stand in long lines to get his phone. The two are flirting and frolicking in the commercial, and it puts the year where they're doing all this. What you hear right there in 2015 is them falling in the water. Her Samsung phone is intact. His iPhone is destroyed. He gets a new one in 2017. You remember that iPhones got rid of that headphone jack. So then they show him using this big contraption and all of these converting devices just to listen to music and charge his phone at the same time. Now, if you're like me, you were upset at the same time when iPhone got rid of those headphone jacks, right? So the Samsung his girlfriend has is charging on the dock, and he finally gets a Samsung, and it says that he's all grown up. What is the point of all of this? The point is, how long can Apple survive based on just how cool they seem, right? At what point will it become that we'll get past the allure of the Apple product? Now, if you listen to the opening bell when I subbed yesterday, we talked about how brick and mortar stores are struggling to combat with online retailers. Well, Apple's a good example of creating an in-store experience that can't be replicated by many, many firms. So they do have that going. And again, a 2.5 share drop yesterday isn't a big deal for a company like Apple, but these lawsuits may be. If Apple doesn't continue to innovate in ways that make sense to consumers, I don't know where they'll be. That's just my two cents on that. Speaking of Samsung, by the way, prosecutors are demanding a 12-year prison term for Samsung heir Lee Jae-young for his conviction on bribery and other charges. The Seoul court in South Korea says prosecutors made the request today during an appeal of a lower court's August sentencing of Lee to 5 years in prison for offering bribes to the former South Korean president and her confidant while she was in office. Both Lee and prosecutors who earlier had asked for a 12-year sentence appealed that ruling. The High Court is expected to issue its ruling in coming weeks. So just to be fair and balanced there, Samsung is not without its controversies. Also, Harley-Davidson placing a renewed emphasis on teaching people to ride as part of its efforts to attract more customers. The program was launched in 2000 with about 50 locations, and now 245 dealerships in the U.S. offer 3 or 4 day courses. The company says about a quarter of those launched in 2014. What they're trying to do is appeal to a younger demo as their aging customer base continues to see a decline in sales due to their aging customer base. Also, ComEd has launched a ride sharing pilot program on the city's south side that relies entirely on electric cars. The Chicago Tribune reported that the service provided by ComEd and several other partners began in mid-December. Its primary aim is a small-scale project that helps senior citizens get from point A to B so that they can run errands. These cars are all 100% electric cars, but they can only go about 35 miles per hour. Again, their goal is to see how efficient electric cars can be, and who's to say whether or not they will continue within that rideshare business. So really interesting stuff. I've got a really interesting guest in studio this morning, good friend of mine by the name of Dwayne Hirsch. Now, we talked about this last week. There's been a rollback on LLC filing fees in the state of Illinois. Dwayne Hirsch is on the executive board for the Small Business Advocacy Council, and he was one of the ones telling me, I think, was it last year that you were talking to me about this?
We talked about this several years ago.
Several years ago. Now, yes. I've known Dwayne, good friend of mine. I've known him since my days at another station down the dial, and he's been talking to me about all of the things that he's been fighting for small business owners, and one of those things was this LLC, the reduction LLC filing fees. Preview a bit what we're going to talk about. Let us know what filing fees were, mm-hmm. where they are now, and what it means for business owners in Illinois. And again, thank you for getting up this early and coming through.
Right, thank you. Well, just up until just a few days ago, the LLC filing fees in the state of Illinois were the highest in the nation at $500 to file a standard LLC in Illinois. Right now, that fee, as of a few days ago, has been reduced to $150. The fee to renew your LLC prior to that was $250. Now that fee has been reduced to $75. And all of the fees related to LLCs in between and the maintenance of your LLC have all been reduced thanks to our legislators in the state of Illinois and the advocacy work of the SBAC.
I'm Domiti Pongo, filling in for Steve Grzanich. You're listening to The Opening Bell, and our guest this morning is Dwayne Hirsch, an executive board member of the Small Business Advocacy Council. Now, they say behind every good piece of legislation are lobbyists. So who were the lobbyists? Who were the people fighting to get the LLC's rollback?
Well, the bill was initiated by the Small Business Advocacy Council, of which I'm on the executive board, like you mentioned. A group of people that a nonpartisan organization that fights for the benefits of small business owners throughout the state. So we work with a coalition of chambers of commerce and other people who have similar interests in protecting the rights and the benefits of small business owners throughout the state, and then working to make that legislation possible through bill sponsors like Tom Cullerton, Senator Tom Cullerton, Carol Sente, other folks like Morrison, Harris, and of course we thank Governor Rauner for signing the bill and all of the legislators who voted for it nearly unanimously.
And this was with bipartisan support then?
Oh, absolutely, bipartisan support.
Now, how does Illinois stack up against other states when it came to filing fees prior to the passing of this bill?
Prior to the passing of the bill, we were the highest in the nation, literally by far.
The very highest,
right, which made us feel a little bit or seem a bit unfriendly.
Right, to
businesses. And a lot of people don't think of a $500 fee as being that high. If you, you know, you're in business, you're supposed to have enough to do that.
Sure.
But like anything else, the fees you pay for those services are dictated by a market. And nationwide, the market did not dictate that LLC filings would be so high. In some states that are around us, our border states, you have fees that are $50, $25, $35. They're all over the place around the country, but none were as high as that $500 mark.
And I doubt people are supposed to do this, air quotes around that, but I know a lot of people who registered their businesses with Indiana addresses.
Oh, absolutely.
If they had properties in Indiana, mm-hmm. they would register there rather than register in Illinois. So do you foresee an influx of business development here in Illinois, in the Chicago area, across the state?
Oh, absolutely. A lot of folks that I know, Facebook friends of mine and friends in general, folks were going right down that day. The bill became active the day he signed it. So you have folks that were running down to the Secretary of State, filing their LLCs, because even though you could take that short trek across to Indiana and save a few few dollars. You'd rather do it right here in your home state.
Absolutely.
And I thought that it was a great sign that Illinois is ready to start to engage the small business community, and again, in a meaningful way, so that we're not leaving and going to Indiana and Wisconsin or other places to file for these businesses.
Now, we know Illinois is cash-strapped. What are the downsides to something like this, right? Because I'm going to see a decrease in revenue then. If you're cutting filing fees from 500 to 150, you multiply that, the difference times how many people are, you know, making this change.
Times that this bill is, versions of this bill that have been up in previous years have all been attached to other bills, like as an earmark, right? And
okay.
It ended up dying in that process. This time it got passed in veto session as a standalone. The thing is that now that the fees are lower, you're going to have a higher volume of filings. The $500 fee was keeping people from filing to a degree that you were not getting the type of revenue that you want. Because in years past, one of the pushbacks that we got had to do with state revenue. That it was going to decrease revenue. But when we did the numbers, it was really only a nominal amount as you think across the line items of a state budget, right? So now the expectation is that with a lower fee, you get a high volume of filings, and those revenues actually, whether it's in a year or two, should actually begin to increase. And now you'll have more people because they can afford the reinstatement. Those reinstatements will get paid more steadily. They'll get paid on time. And I think ultimately it will increase the state's revenues.
What resources is the SBAC providing to small business owners? Because with it being, you know, with that fee drop, you got to have a lot of people who want to get their businesses started for 2018 need to know what they're doing. So, and especially with, we're going to talk to a tax professional in just a moment to talk about this tax overhaul and how that can change the way business is done, right? Actually, I love if you can stick around for that conversation as
Absolutely
well.
Absolutely will.
But what resources is the SBAC offering to young entrepreneurs who are getting started?
Right. Well, as an organization, we do a lot of networking events around town and suburban areas to get people an opportunity to intermix with other networking professionals. That's one. Secondly, we have an organization called SBAC Empower that provides small business workshops to get people kind of a lot of the information that they need to get their business started and off to the right foot early. And those workshops are done at different points in the year in different areas. Our next one we expect to start in the spring. It's very informative, and it gives a lot of education, a lot of resources. Our website, sbacil.org. Also gives a lot of information and resources to small business owners as well.
You can also tweet us at WGN Radio, of course, and we'll get those questions answered. Someone who's going to answer some of my questions about this new tax overhaul, Paran Wetzel. The impact of the new tax reform will have on your daily life. We need to talk about that, from the change in your paycheck to the value of your home. Now, although the GOP tax bill is under fire from Democrats for snubbing the middle class, the 1,000-page document does contain plenty of tax breaks. If you qualify, tax experts are combing through that legislation to get a handle on how its new tax brackets and treatments of everything from bonds to charitable donations will impact their clients. And just to help us field all of this, we have Paran Wetzel from PG Wetzel and Associates. How you doing?
Good morning. I am a tax accountant.
How you doing this morning? Now, tell us exactly what is in this GOP tax bill.
There are a lot of interesting information in the tax bill. Typically, there are going to be things in relationship to reducing individual taxes for the next 9 years. Now, I noticed that there are some things that people didn't notice in the tax bill, particularly people who are divorced and are paying alimony. Before and the tax law took effect, you could deduct the expense that you paid your spouse or ex-spouse on your taxes. Now you can't deduct that. So that's going to be a big increase for individuals who have been divorced, but they cannot deduct the amount that they paid their prior spouse.
So what are some of those deductions that you can take advantage of?
Okay, some of the things you can take advantage of are, let's go down the list. You can now take a medical deduction. They reduced it from 10% to 7.5% in regards to medical expenses. Let's help individuals that's going to be able to reduce their taxes that way. Then also, you know, there's a cap on the income taxes that you can deduct from when you have high state income taxes like New Jersey, New York, California, D.C., and Connecticut and Oregon. They have high income taxes, as well as the real estate taxes. They capped that out at $10,000 before it was unlimited. Now individuals are trying to prepay their income taxes for 2018, and the IRS said they could not prepay their income taxes because of the fact that they prepaid them. In regards to interest deduction, they limited the interest deduction to the interest on the first $750,000 on your house as opposed to before it was $1 million and also $100,000 if you had a home equity loan. They also said in the bill that you cannot do that after December 15th. So if you bought a house before December 15th, 2017, you're able to take that $1 million deduction as opposed to the $750,000 deduction on your interest.
And I saw I heard you say you can't prepay your income taxes. Are you able in some states to prepay your property taxes? I saw a story yesterday in New York where lines were around the corner, folks rushing to prepay their property taxes so that they could take advantage of how things are now before they change next year. What are the specifics on that?
Specifically, they haven't decided on that in the bill. It was open. So the IRS may allow you to do it. It may not. So that hasn't been decided because people have been trying to contact the Internal Revenue Service in regard to that, and there has been no clear definition. So it's a little bit of a gamble if you do that, but, you know, if it works, it works for you. So we're still up in the air for that one.
Okay, so it's a state-by-state issue, I'm assuming, there. So how long would these tax cuts last?
These tax cuts will last up until 2026 or 25, 10 years, and then they'll start to dissipate. And depending on what type of tax bracket you're in, your taxes may start going up sooner. Like if you're in the 40 to 75% tax bracket, your taxes may start going back up in 2023. So it all depends on what tax bracket you're in, depending on when your taxes will start going back up again.
What will there be any immediate financial impact, whether that's good or whether that's bad for the individual? And then what will be the financial impact on the country as well?
Well, the Internal Revenue Service is currently rewriting the form called a W-4 form to determine if individuals, what type of existence they have in order to calculate what type of tax they're going to be paying. And those won't be out until mid-February, as our estimate right now, because they haven't given us any guidance as far as when they will be out. And typically, most tax brackets, they will be receiving any type of increased income of anywhere between 1 and 3.5%. Depending on what type of tax bracket you're in, if you're married, single, or head of household, and how many children you have. So typically goes from 1% to 3.5% increase in your paycheck based upon those tax brackets. Now, the impact is that people have more money to put into their pockets to spend on different things that, in theory, that should help the economy more, or people be able to save more and have live from paycheck to paycheck.
That was actually going to be my next question. Do you think, looking at where consumer confidence is, do you foresee people spending more once they have this extra money in their pocket, or will they save that, and what are the implications of that? Because we're looking at some reports where some early forecasting is saying that interest rates may increase as the economy continues to improve. And I wonder how consumers are looking at this improvement in the economy. Will that spur spending or encourage people to save? What is your take based on what you've been seeing?
Well, if you look at the numbers and you're talking, 1 to 3% of a person's income, how much is that going to add to your paycheck? It may add, example, if you're in the between $40,000 and $75,000 tax bracket, at the max you're going to receive $2,550. You divide that by, so you get paid, biweekly, that add about $98 a paycheck to your paycheck. Will that make a difference? It may make a difference to some people. A lot of people, I don't think it's going to make a lot of difference because the amount is going to be so small. If you received all the money in one lump sum, then it would make a big difference in, being able to spend that money. But you only receive $10 or $15. Do you actually see $10 or $15? The average person spends $5 on a cup of coffee if they go to Starbucks.
Right. Also in studio, I have Dwayne Hirsch with the Small Business Advocacy Council. He has a question about taxes and how they'll affect small businesses. But first, one more for you. What do you need to know if you're planning on selling your home?
Well, the big cutoff is going to be home is more than $750,000. That's going to be the market that may be affected the most. Any homes that are under $750,000 as far as, being able to deduct the interest, it shouldn't have any effect. Also, they kept in the tax law the provision where that you sell your primary residency, you don't have to pay any capital gains on your primary residency, which is definitely a big incentive for people to sell their houses as opposed to have to pay tax on their primary residencies.
I have a question for you. How will a lot of folks have talked about the fact that corporate taxes are going to be reduced, I believe, from 35% down to 20%. And we're talking today about the fact that LLC filing fees in the state of Illinois have gotten lowered and reduced by a significant amount, which we expect to add a lot more business owners to the pool. Will that tax benefit also be passed to them? And so can they expect that as another incentive and a reason why they should be starting their own small business?
Yes, I think small businesses are going to start to explode, which is, you know, small businesses are the engine of the economy. You know, most small businesses generate more employees than big corporations. People don't understand mm-hmm. that. And I think that's going to help a lot because of the fact that, one, the rates are going to be lower for small businesses, and they get to deduct up to 30% of their income out of that pass-through income without having to pay any taxes on it. That's going to be a big break for small businesses and help spur the economy in that aspect.
Perrin, I'm thinking about the macroeconomic implications of all of this, right? Our debt, this cost the country $1.5 trillion. What does that mean for the national debt, and how does the national debt affect the everyday person? Because I'm going to be honest, you hear a lot about it, but when I'm walking around, I'm not thinking about, oh man, I'm not thinking about the national debt, I'm thinking about student loan debt. So Perrin, what should we know about the effect that this will have on the national debt?
I think it's going to have a positive effect because of the fact that you realize that interest rates cannot go up, you know, very high. And because that interest rate cannot go up very high, it's going to keep your interest rates on your student loans and all other debt is going to be low. Because if the federal government is carrying $20 trillion worth of debt, they cannot afford for the interest rate to go too high. Because if they go too high, the government can't pay the interest debt on its debt. Because consequently, the Federal Reserve is always going to keep interest rates low. If you remember back in the early 80s, interest rates were up at 21%. Now interest rates are well below 21%. So if you think about it, if you had $20 trillion worth of debt at 21% interest, could the federal government afford that? No, the federal government could not afford that. Consequently, you're going to keep interest rates low on a continuous basis. That's going to help to spur the economy by keeping interest rates low.
That's the good side. Is there a downside to that?
Well, there's always a downside. The downside is the government would go broke, but do you think the government's going to go broke?
No, I hope not. Should first-time buyers purchase a home?
Well, it's already become law in regards to being able to take advantage of that $1 million cap on interest rate deductions when you have a house because it took effect on December 15th. The tax law said that any house had to be under contract by December 15th and closed by April 18th, 2018, and we've already passed that deadline. So if you decided to, you know, to buy a house over $750,000, you're going to be buying it based upon the value of the house as opposed to thinking about the tax deduction that you'll be able to receive from the interest basis on that.
Hey, all right, I have a question for you. I'm a real estate agent, and I work with a lot of real estate investors who are short-term investors. They do flips on properties. How is there any significant change in what they can expect in terms of capital gains taxes that they'll have to pay?
Well, individuals who are flipping as a business, they don't pay capital gains on a flip because that's a business, and they only pay ordinary taxes on that. So consequently, the tax rate, depending on how other type of deduction they'll have being able to different tax rates, but they will be able to deduct their interest not based upon that limit because of the fact that they're in a business.
Okay.
So they're not capped by that $750,000 limit as far as interest is concerned because they're flipping. It's a business, and you can deduct interest on your business as a business expense.
All right. You've been listening to tax counselor Perrin Wetzel with PG Wetzel and Associates. Thank you so much for getting up early this morning and clearing this up. Learned a lot. That was an action-packed 10 minutes. You can learn more about his firm at pgwetzel.com. Is there anywhere that we can go and kind of download some of this information that you've given us on air? Any resources that people can go to so that they can take advantage of some of the information you gave out?
Yes, if you go to my website, I have a resources website and give you resources, things you can look at. Also, I have a newsletter every quarter that goes on and talks about all the different tax changes and things that can help you in regards to your taxes.
All right, that's at pgwetzel.com. That's pgwetzel.com.
You're listening to The Opening Bell on 720 WGN.
I'm Domati Pongo, in for Steve Grzanich. This morning, let's get an update on the Associated WGN Market Desk. Dow futures up about 3 points right now. S&P futures up 2.25. NASDAQ futures up 4. Oil down about half a point. Let's get the latest on agriculture and commodities with Orion Samuelson.
Good morning. As we look at yesterday's market, not bad cattle trade, not bad soybean trade, but there was one higher market that farmers probably won't appreciate. The oil market climbed sharply yesterday, hitting $60 a barrel for the first time since mid-2015. And with all of the fuel used by farmers and ranchers to put in the crop and to harvest the crop, higher oil prices will not be a good deal on their balance sheet. But the grain market, soybeans were up on short covering yesterday and more favorable growing weather in South America. Nearby January beans ended up 8.5 cents. March corn only gained half a cent, and March wheat lost 2.5 cents a bushel. Turning to the livestock trade, though, a great day for the cattle market. The February live cattle contract ending with a gain of $2.95 a hundredweight. The January feeder cattle contract up $3.05. And the February hog contract gained $1.60 in yesterday's trade. Looking ahead to the new year, two major conventions coming up in January for farmers and ranchers. First of all, we get the American Farm Bureau Convention. That gets underway on January 6 in Nashville, Tennessee. And then the National Cattlemen's Beef Association getting underway January 31st in Phoenix, Arizona. It'll be a busy meeting year again. Have a great day. I'm Orion Samuelson.
Orion, you have a great day, too, and thank you. Now on the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk Outlook for today, December 27th. Wall Street set for a slightly upbeat open amid thin holiday trades. That according to CNBC and according to those futures that we just read moments ago. U.S. stock index futures are pointing to a slightly higher open on today as investors gear up for the latest in economic data as the year draws to a close. Again, you heard in our reports earlier this morning from Wall Street that Amazon posted very generous gains as a result of holiday sales. So good news for Amazon there. And also, the story we're looking at out of Saudi Arabia, as we talked about taxes, Saudi Arabia and the United Arab Emirates making some tax changes as well. They plan to impose a 5% tax next year on most goods and services to boost revenue after oil prices collapsed 3 years ago. The value-added tax has raised some concerns among residents there who say the cost of living is already high, and the January 1st rollout may spark an end-of-year shopping spree. There will be some exemptions for big-ticket costs like rent, real estate sales, certain medications, airline tickets, and school tuition. So be on the lookout for that. Also, some news out of Tesla. Elon Musk promises to build a Tesla pickup truck, says he's been dying to build one. Tesla unveiled its semi and second generation Roadster earlier this year, and he's planning to build this pickup truck, or at least talk about plans to do so. So we'll see how the markets respond to that. Again, our guests this morning have been Peran Wetzel, tax counselor. You can get a look at some of the resources he gave us this morning about everything you need to know about the tax bill, or at least some of what you need to know, because it's a 1,000-page document. I'm sure we can't get to everything that's in it, and a lot of what's happening is yet to be seen. But those resources are at pgwetzel.com. That's pgwetzel.com. And in studio, who's nice enough to hang out with me and learn with me about some of these things, is Dwayne Hirsch with the Small Business Advocacy Council. Can you let them know where they can connect with you as well?
Well, yeah. Each month I do a networking event in Hyatt Park the third Wednesday of each month at the Hyatt Place at 5225 South Harper from 6 to 8 p.m. Connect with the SBAC at sbacil.org. You can find out information about our networking events throughout the city, the suburban areas, and places where you can come and meet great people, connect, learn about our advocacy work, our policy committee, and how you can get involved in impacting future legislation for our plans for 2018. You can also find me on Facebook, Instagram, and any other social media outlet at simply with my name, Dwayne Hirsch, D-W-A-Y-N-E-H-I-R-S-C-H.